This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Hey, everyone. It's Estelle Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century. And that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to Popcast Deluxe, your Today You Tell Me Something y Mañana Otra Cosa of Weekly Cultural Review. I'm John Caramonica.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. Speaking Spanish.
I'm just saying I'm talking about pop music's future, referencing pop music's past. If you know, you know. Joe, I'm going to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's one answer to this question. Maybe there's 100 answers to this question.
Mm-hmm.
What's the song of the summer of the year 2023? There is no song.
Yes.
Okay, that's our show. Thank you so much for watching.
I was going to say, my question, I'm going to answer your question with another question, which is, what is a song of the summer?
What is a song of a summer?
What does song of the summer mean to you?
Okay, so let's clarify. Probably, if I had to guess, in like the headline and description of this episode, which we have not yet written, there will be song of the summer. That phrase will be there. For years, you, me, Karen, everybody we talk to, all we say, that's not a real thing. It's not a real thing. It's less of a real thing now
than it ever was.
It already wasn't a real thing, let's say 4 or 5 years ago. It's definitely not a real thing now. Like, I remember very vividly in the Times Magazine, like 20 years ago, when the Method Man Mary J. Blige record was out, this would have been the late 90s, there was a whole piece on how that was the song of the summer. And I thought it was such like a smart way to think about how songs move through the universe through the lens of real people.
You're saying that's the first song of the summer?
No, I'm not saying it's the first. I'm just saying it's like a memorable approach to how to think about the song of the summer.
Yeah.
But that is not a real thing. Like, whatever that was in terms of like distribution and
monoculture.
Monoculture.
That buzzword. Yeah.
Not a real thing. So I think if we're going to talk about song of the summer, what we're actually going to be talking about is the atomization of pop music.
Always.
Any podcast listener knows this is like a normal thing. We're going to be talking a lot about genre and genre experiments. There are some songs that like feel like they're approaching monoculture, but I think on a fundamental level, those songs are notable, as notable for who they're excluding as who they're including. So Song of the Summer, it's washed. It's BS.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, this has been disrupted by the pandemic, I think, as most things have.
Sure.
But I think increasingly when we talk about a song of the summer, and we talk about it as like it's a media creation, it's content.
Sure,
it's
is
something that, you know, ourselves, we've tried to resist it over the years, but Billboard and Complex and Vulture and Rolling Stone and Pitchfork and all of the places that remain for covering music and popular culture, it's a gimme post. It's a gimme feature.
It's a gimme YouTube episode.
It's a gimme podcast. It's a gimme video podcast. But I think increasingly when we talk about Song of the Summer, what we're really talking about is the biggest song of the year that also happened to be popular during the summer.
Yes. And that could be, frankly, that could be at the tail end of its arc.
Yep.
It could be at the beginning of its arc.
Yeah.
Sometimes you genuinely don't know what the song of the summer really was until like October.
Right.
If there was in fact a song of the summer.
Right.
You don't really know what it was until like October.
Last year, Fine As It Was by Harry Styles, really popular song throughout the summer. Like pretty much the only really popular song of the whole year. You know,
yes.
Like the only memorable Smash.
And a much deserved Grammy Award.
Yeah, sure. Right. But when I think back, you know, and Old Town Road is another good example. It's like Old Town Road, not particularly summery, not particularly tied in my memory to the summer itself. But like, sure, it was big during the summer of 2019. So it was the song of the summer.
Okay. But with this in mind, do you feel on some level, is there something about the summer that compels this need for an aggregated culture? Like, why are we not talking about the song of the winter?
Well,
why are we not talking about the song of the fall?
That's what they do in the UK, you know, the song of the winter, the Christmas number one. That's the...
Considering how long I lived in the UK, you think I would know that. And I don't know this.
It's the plot of Love Actually.
I definitely have not seen Love Actually.
The rare film you might actually like.
We'll see. You know, we'll return to that in a later episode. Right,
we're going to do a full Love Actually episode for December.
What's a rewatchables, but there's no re?
And just watchables. Yeah, for the first time.
We're just doing watchables. Yeah. Love Actually. Yep. Yeah.
No, you would really like that, I think.
I'll take it under advisement.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, yeah, it's a thing. Who has the number one song on Christmas in the UK? That's what they call it. Anyway, summer, but I do think it matters. It means what song do you hear when people are driving by with their windows down? What are you blasting on the way to the beach? What's playing in the parking lot?
Yes, the car window theory.
The car window theory. What's playing in the parking lot after,
What's playing from your car window?
Right now?
Yeah, like if I catch you...
Honestly, we're going to get to this, but like Super Shy, like was a previous song of the week, the New Jeans song, like that... You know, that's what I'm playing. Yeah. Rolling down the block.
Okay.
Right now, and that has like a summery thing. The other thing is dancing, right? You're imagining like the club, the barbecue, the beach. You know, if you're walking through, maybe you go to Rockaway, maybe you go to Jacob Riis. These are New York places.
Fort Tilden might be.
Fort Tilden, yeah. And you're snaking like through the towels. You know, and
I don't
there's
like joy.
You get no joy at the
no
beach.
Joy.
I'm not really a beach guy, but like. You got your little Beats pill, you know, on every towel. It's like, what are the ambient sounds? And it is very New York. And I think we should talk specifically about New York songs. Of the
yes.
summer.
Although my counter contention, I think we're going to get into this, that the song of the summer does not exist IRL. And if it exists, it only exists here.
Right.
This is the only genuine place where a bunch of people. What is, are you holding yours?
In their headphones.
I thought you were telling, I thought you were like,
closing my ears.
I thought you were like, stop talking.
No.
Okay, fine.
You're saying within one's own personal universe.
In this system is the only place that could plausibly reach what I would say is the mass amount of people required to anoint a potential song of the summer. So we'll get to that. We should start though with the obvious answer to this question.
Right.
Because there is only one genuinely obvious answer to this question. That is a song that has been literally the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 for
16 weeks.
That is Morgan Wallen, Last Night.
Right.
This is a little bit of Last Night. If you are somehow not up on this, this is Last Night. So I had said that there are some songs of the summer that are notable for who they exclude as who they include. This is a huge country hit. Morgan Wallen obviously is still in the arc of grappling with the issue where he used a racial slur 3 years ago. That has not stemmed the popularity of his album or of this song. But I would contend that there's a lot of folks
who
in the country
know.
Who literally not only don't know this song, don't know who Morgan Wallen is. I had someone email me yesterday, unconnected to this, and said they found out about who Morgan Wallen was from Popcast.
We heard that this morning also in a conversation that we had.
Yes, that's true. Two times in 2 days.
And I've had people come to me and say, hey, you know this guy Morgan Wallen? Like, I love this song Last Night, and have no idea.
Of the whole backstory.
That not only was his last album extremely popular, but that he had this entire controversy also.
Why isn't this the song? Why don't we just end the episode now? Why isn't this the song of the summer?
I'll do a couple reasons. One, because can't really dance to it. Like, it's not a party song. I think like you could play it at a bar or a barbecue.
Kind of a two-step. It's got a little two-step.
Yeah, but it's not like Nobody is losing their minds.
Are you daring me to like go on YouTube and find like dance tutorials to this song?
Nobody's losing their minds to Last Night.
That's a regional bias. That's big coastal energy you're getting.
I don't think that it is.
Big regional. It's big liberal arts college energy.
I think we're going to get to country songs on this list where more people are losing their minds, even if but the BPM definitely, is slower.
They're less dancey.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Even if the BPM is slower. Right. And I'm sure there are remixes of at least one of the other songs we're going to talk about.
Do you think that there is a Jersey Club remix of Last Night?
Sounds good. Conceptually.
Send it to us. Podcast. Yeah. Put it in the comments. Podcasting.com. If there's a Jersey Club remix of anything we talk about that we haven't pointed to, point us to it. We're curious.
So on this Morgan Wallen level, there are maybe a couple other contenders or would be contenders that would match this song's level of dominance, which to be clear is now the longest running number one on the Hot 100 by a solo artist ever, topping Harry Styles.
Doesn't that seem to undermine the whole point that we're trying to make, that there is no monoculture, that there is no centrist pop anymore? It's this. I mean, people might not like it. People might be uncomfortable. And frankly, there are people who have cloistered themselves off from what other people in the country are listening to. But this would seem to be the kind of no argument answer. And yet.
But this brings us to Taylor Swift, as most things do. I think
today in Taylor Swift.
Yeah, but like we're rebranding today in Taylor Swift. Yeah, if we're talking about the monoculture, we're talking about this summer. Taylor Swift is the center of the musical
universe. Eras Tour, right? Very viral.
We don't have to go into it, but I think
wild viral.
Right. What? So Antihero, too old to be the song of the summer. Mm-hmm. Sort of past its peak. Mm-hmm. The single that I think was supposed to be Taylor Swift's song of the summer was Karma.
Especially the remix with Ice Spice.
Didn't stick around.
No, didn't stick around.
Hit number two on the charts, I believe. But was not dominant.
And
in
also
any
just
way.
A quick sidebar on chart position. Like you may see statistics like that and think, huh, the number two song in the country, that must be really popular.
Right.
But one thing, and we'll get to this a little bit later, people have gotten very good at gaming the Hot 100, among other things. And so you may see something that appears very briefly at the top of the album chart, at the top of the pop chart, and then it disappears. And that, to me, will let you know. Don't look at the peak position.
Yeah, we're talking about longevity.
Look at the number. If you're going to look at the Billboard Hot 100, look at the number of weeks. Don't look at the peak position.
Yeah. So I think, basically the one thing Taylor Swift has not had this summer is the sort of crowning achievement jewel of a song to cement 2023 as her moment.
Or it's Cruel Summer.
So what happened as Karma was sort of not achieving what it was supposed to achieve.
One of many hits that were not hits.
We
reached
pop back.
Stars. Yeah.
Swifties specifically, Taylor and her fans reached back 4 years to a song that never got to be a single from Lover in 2019. Mm-hmm. And they picked Cruel Summer. And not only did she release it as a single to radio, meaning like she promoted it, handed it to the stations, mm-hmm. and said, this is my priority. But all the fans have backed her up on it. They've streamed it. They've downloaded it. And if we go by predictions, next week it could very well hit number one. So Cruel Summer, song of the summer. I mean, like, again, even like thematically, you know, it's so obvious and yet it
just
feels
like
fake. A little bit.
Yeah, it's like, I think what we're going to be talking about throughout this episode are basically a lot of microclimates. And I think part of our jobs is keeping an eye on like 50 different microclimates. This is like a microclimate that feels like a universal climate because it's Taylor Swift. But I don't find it inherently meaningful. This could have happened with really almost any Taylor Swift song. I'm not sure that there's something super emblematic about this song, except Summer. But I don't think there's something super emblematic about this song, except that it was underloved or whatever in its first issuance. But really, this song and the success of this song exists to satisfy demand that is created by the tour.
Yes.
And by the sort of like virality and the conversation of the tour. All of that has to like glom on to something. This happens to be the song that it glommed onto.
But it doesn't feel of the moment because it's literally not.
It's literally not. And I don't think, I don't know, I'd be surprised if 5 years from now we look back at this summer and be like, ah, yes, the summer of Cruel Summer. I don't think that's going to happen.
Right.
I feel like there's a better chance that we're going to look back at this summer and say it's the summer of the return of Olivia Rodrigo. Seems more likely. We have Vampire.
Another one that didn't really like came out at the right time.
Is it rude to call it Learner's Permit?
Learner's Permit. You can't be the first person to make that joke.
I don't know. Should I Google it?
No, we're just going to say you came up with it originally, but retroactively.
I like the song. Just credit, for the record, I like the song.
Retroactively, you're crediting whoever tweeted it first.
That's fine. If you tweeted it and you have like 9 followers, congratulations. Great job.
Yeah.
Great job. A song I very much like.
Yeah.
But a song very much in the vein of Driver's License.
Yeah.
And a song that exists. You want to talk about why, what is the function of a song right now? A song serves to function to aggregate loose energy of public interest. There's a tremendous amount of public interest in Olivia Rodrigo, both musical and extra musical. And a song like Vampire solves both of those problems at the same time. Very strategic, especially when you hold it up against the song that came out a couple of days ago, Bad Idea, right? That's a different version of Olivia Rodrigo. It solves a different problem.
I do think if Bad Idea, right, would have come
should
out.
Should we listen to Bad Idea, right?
Yeah, let's listen to it. Yes, I know that he's my ex, but can't do me what we connect. I only see him as a friend, the biggest lie I ever said. Oh, yes, I know that he's my ex, but can't do me what we connect. I only see him as a friend. His tricks are bowing to his bed. I do think if Bad Idea, right, came out when Vampire came out, maybe it wouldn't have been the number one debut that you needed for a lead single for a sophomore album.
Yeah.
But it would have had more summer momentum because of its energy, because of the jitter of it, and because of the edge.
And the Fight for Your Right to Party video.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Whereas Vampire, obviously,
a more progressive version of modern version of the Fight for Your Right to Party
video. Right. But I think because Vampire is a power ballad, as you were alluding to with the driver's license comparison, like it's harder for that to be a summer banger, basically.
Unless everybody is sad all summer.
Okay, so would you call this a sad summer in particular?
I personally was not sad all summer.
Okay.
Only part of it.
Right.
But like, broadly speaking, I'm not like this thing about the dancing and the Beats Pills on the towels. Like, this is nice. This is like, that's a great story for 7 years ago. I'm not necessarily.
We don't do that now.
Nah. Yeah. I'm not necessarily convinced that there has to be that kind of through line. Like, I think the through line can be sadness. The through line can be trauma.
Okay, what are you proposing then as the song of the summer?
The true cruel summer.
Yeah.
I don't have a proposition. I'm simply saying I don't think there's any reason that a morbid song can't be the song of the summer.
Okay, so maybe that's...
Which does not exist, but should we just asterisk? Every time we say song of the summer, just know there's an asterisk.
Right.
We don't have to keep saying it.
Yeah.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made. Or how a wooden table is built, piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at The New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at The New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to The New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Let's talk about some rap songs.
Great.
Because weirdly, the biggest rap song of the year, maybe. Like, it's early, but could very well be the comeback single from Gunna, which is like an accidental single.
Very strange. Do you like this record?
Yeah, it's cool. It stuck out to me when I listened to the album the first time. I think there are better songs on the album, which I think continues to be a pretty good album. But I think there's something in particular about, we'll call it F You Mean, for these purposes. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to a little bit of Gunna, F You Mean.
Ecstasy wanna fulfill. Smoke out the pound when I'm chillin'. Trappin', I made me a killer. Look, I got everybody wishing. I hope you play your position. I don't want nobody listening. I see the whole precision.
So obviously it has the little choir accents, which I think make it really stick out and which have helped lead to its success on TikTok. But really what this song shows is like all of the sort of intra rap hand wringing about like whether Gunna would be welcomed back after pleading guilty in the YSL RICO case and admitting to the fact that he's saying YSL is a gang and does that make him a snitch and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know what makes everything go away?
A hit. Okay, I have a counterpoint though. This record, the Gunna song, is not a hit in the way that prior Gunna songs have been hits. It feels a little foggier, feels a little mistier, doesn't feel as connected to the center of like hip hop radio.
No, it's a TikTok song.
Yes. And so that to me actually doesn't disprove the notion. And the Gunna record to me feel like there's a lot in common with this 2C record that's been big for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, okay, 2C had hit like a couple hits like 5 years ago or something.
Sure.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And again,
2C was like an almost was.
Yes.
And then happened upon favorite song.
So let's listen to favorite song, which unless you've been on, if you've been on TikTok, you've heard this.
And if you've listened to Hot 97, you've heard this.
So this is favorite song by 2C.
I'm on the stage right now, singing your favorite song. Look in the crowd, you know it'll be found as they sing along. I say you look good without no makeup, no lashes, even better when you wake up.
Juicy, not a star.
No.
I will say the
increasingly though, the live show looks,
and the closest look at Juicy, like the most recognizable Juicy thing I've seen recently is he did a video with Keith Lee, the food guy in Vegas, like they did a video together. And I was like, dude, like that's the most sustained camera time on 2C that I've seen in a long time. This song, you alluded to it as sort of like a fake Rod Wave song.
Fake Rod Wave. I don't think anybody who listens to this song casually doesn't know it's not the same as Rod Wave.
That's actually fascinating because, you know, it reminds me. Okay. I haven't put this in writing, but like it's been on my mind for months. You know Timmy T was? This is like definitely before your time.
No, tell me about Timmy T.
One More Try. This is kind of like a very, very, very saccharine, like a pop hit that was like sort of like club music adjacent in scene, not in sound. I want to say it was 1989 or 1990.
Okay.
It at the time, I remember thinking pop music was here and it was kind of like in a cloud hovering over everything else, like in loose dialogue, but not at all connected. That to me is how this song feels. It has these connections. Yeah, sort of sounds like Rod Wave. It's produced by people who have been paying attention to things that are in dialogue.
Yeah.
But there's something so fundamentally vacuous about it that it actually feels completely disembodied, which is why it's actually surprising that the shows are that turned, because you're just like, what are people showing up
for?
What
are people responding to?
Right. Yeah. Like, and even if they're absolutely losing it for those 3 minutes, what's happening for the other 45 minutes?
Yeah, maybe people just love 2C deep cuts. We got to go see a 2C show.
Okay, text me. Let me know.
But I think there are a collection of these rap songs that are huge at the moment. At least the numbers and the charts tell us they're huge, but they don't really feel like you're saying about the Gunna song and this 2C song. They don't really feel at the center of anything. They don't feel like the core voice of the hip hop mainstream. And to me, a song that's a lot like that is All My Life, the Lil Durk J. Cole song.
I totally agree. Just as a sidebar, Timmy T record came out October 1990.
Okay.
And it went to number one in March 1991, the Billboard Hot 100.
Okay.
And you've never heard it.
I was freshly 2 years old and then two and a half.
This honestly would have been a song a 2 year old could have gotten into.
Okay.
Truly.
I'm sure I heard it around the house.
I feel like we should play a tiny bit. Let's just shout, like, Kimmy T, song one more try. Song. I was going to write a whole notebook about this. I guess someone else is going to do that now.
Song of the summer, Timmy T. And after all that we have been through, won't you let me tell you why? One more try. I didn't know how much I loved you. One more try. Let me put my arms around you.
Seriously, break, if Cruel Summer can come back, bring back Timmy T one more try. Honestly. All right, so the Dirk J. Cole record, yeah. Not a real record.
Fake hit, but like huge hit, choir? Apparently. I'm told, yeah, and similar to the Gunna thing, like has these little textures that make it sound big or important. And yet, like who again, loves this song?
This song exists, like a lot of these other songs, to aggregate pre-existing interest in Lil Durk.
Yes.
Amplified by the sort of gravitas of a J. Cole feature.
With the children's choir.
Yes, yeah. Which is just like a record that has a children's choir must be important and socially pointed.
Right, like remember Nas, remember yes. Jay-Z, like, you know, that very much like...
Yeah,
made for rap radio.
And so it's designed for that.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I have no like quarrel with it. And I have heard it on the radio a bunch, but it doesn't feel like a sort of emblematic Durk record to me.
And I just, again, going back to the idea of like people losing their minds, which however you mean that, like I just don't feel like this is stirring anything in anyone.
Okay, so the only song in this category that I feel even is close to being a song of the summer, like truly... In which to say I've heard it in multiple contexts. I've heard it out. I've heard it in the radio. I've heard it in different cities, drive time, nighttime, club, etc. That's Creepin'. And this is Metro Boomin, The Weeknd, 21 Savage, just viciously remaking a Mario Winans song. A great Mario Winans. If you're playing
me, keep it on the low. Which in and of itself sampled Enya?
Yes. Like quite so is literally.
Enya getting points off this Metro Boomin record?
I'm going to assume that Enya is.
Peace Shout out to Enya.
Peace to Enya. Like yeah. Literally lives in a castle.
Yeah.
I believe. Like,
definitely.
Very much in keeping with Much Pop, just ruthlessly pilfering from recent a pop previous history.
Year. Yeah.
I really like it. It's strange that The Weeknd, who usually sounds so signature, weirdly just doesn't sound like The Weeknd. I mean, he sounds like The Weeknd sounding like Mario. It's a strange hybrid song. Like, why did The Weeknd choose to do it? It's bizarre. It's not an advanced concept at all.
Barely a concept.
But it like very much proves the durability of the original hit / hits.
Yeah. And even 21 Savage is sort of like, okay, I'm going to stick to the script and we're just going to knock out this radio record and we'll all keep it moving.
You compare that to the other like alleged big summer song that The Weeknd is on, which is K-pop, Travis Scott, Bad Bunny, Weeknd song.
Right. Another failed song.
Could you identify K-pop? I mean, could like if they were playing it in a mall, would you be like, that's K-pop?
I don't even think Shazam could identify K-pop. You know what I mean? Like if it's playing in the mall and you... smash on your Shazam, it's like
bigness
is flashing right,
this
red.
Is like, I just feel like it's a lesson. We want to say this directly to our friends at major labels, to our friends who are A&Rs. Bigness is not its own reward. Frankly, this is a waste of resources. If you only have one shot to do a feature with Bad Bunny or one shot to do a feature with The Weeknd, don't be this craven.
Yeah.
Don't be this. An absolute waste of resources.
Right. The other person on par with Travis Scott and also Taylor Swift, frankly, in terms of having a huge summer but doesn't have the song to place that energy on, is Drake. And I guess Drake's attempt at that sort of like half-assed was Search and Rescue.
Fine.
Which like
good song.
Good song. Great at the concert.
Not a kind of ubiquitous world killer.
No, not at all. And like For All the Dogs, We're Still Waiting. You know, Drake told us about an album weeks and weeks ago.
I know.
Summer's slipping.
I live in fear of the of the shock drop of all the time. Like, what if I'm on the road? What if I'm somewhere? What if I'm in Montana?
And it's like, instead of the would-be Drake smash, we've got this Central C for
talk. Got no stick in a ride. If I take flicks with the guys, I gotta put emojis over like three faces because the feds can't see those eyes.
Combination is Drake saying combination is the song of the summer.
Combination. Absolutely the song of the summer. Is it the ADHD or the generalized anxiety?
Yeah.
Combination.
So I think we see this more and more these days, which is like, here's what it's supposed to be, but here's what it actually is. You know, like we're getting fed something by the old,
right?
By in the old recipe,
and then the new, not the new guard, but the new systems are sort of like surfacing. And even you saw this week, Drake announced that Sexy Red is going to be on some of these upcoming tour dates.
Yep.
Talk about like one line, like Drake saying combination of song summer, maybe Sexy Red saying whatever Sexy Red said.
Bleep, 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 bleep.
I want to emphasize every time we do this, we know what we're doing like this, but we can't like,
yeah,
just go Google it. But saying what she said on Pound Town, her catchphrase from Pound Town, maybe that's the song of the summer.
Right. I mean, Pound Town, I think for a lot of people, probably a song of those summers. Some people are living a Pound Town summer. Some people are living a Pound Town 2 summer featuring Nicki Minaj.
Yes.
And some people are leading a ski summer.
Yes.
Which is a catchphrase that she can say without getting bleeped.
That's true. You can say it without getting
as a standalone.
You can say it without getting bleeped. More, probably more crucially.
So I think she's
But let's talk about that thing. When we talk about the atomization of pop music, when we talk about things being broken down into component parts, when we talk about, I mean, I remember the first time I wrote about TikTok for the paper, whatever it was, 3-4 years ago, I remember saying effectively, this is bad for music. And it's good that it amplifies a lot of musicians and a lot of like moments of songs, but it's not about music. It's about essentially distilled down to the meme or distilled down to the catchphrase or whatever. You know, I felt like a little churlish saying it, but fundamentally what you're having now is catchphrase to superstar.
Right.
And Drake saying combination, really not that different from Sexy Red saying what Sexy Red says on Pound Town and becoming a star. Really not that different. And so in a weird way, you're having like the battle of the catchphrases. And the song of the summer, to your point, is a catchphrase.
The thing I would say in favor of Sexy Red, though, is that she can churn out catchphrases. Yes. Like the whole mixtape, you know, the whole Hood Princess mixtape.
8.0.
is filled with these, and she's proven that she can do it over and over again. And I think her own innate star power can make a catchphrase out of something that might not be on its own. So I think like that is sustainable in some way, that she's on this upward trajectory because she can make so many of these anthems that speak to a very discreet audience.
And it's also arriving in a moment where female rap virality is sort of at a high. You know, if I say the words pasta and lobster to you, I know you're going to know I'm talking about Kali. We're talking about area codes.
Right.
Let's actually listen to a little bit of that.
Got a white boy on my roster. He be feeding me pasta and lobster. He just hit me up on Tuesday like, what's doing, babe? Let me take you shopping. I told him, well, I'm a little busy. He said, damn, I'm in your city. But anyway, it's okay. Hope you have a good day. I'm going to see you by day 50.
You have this song. Obviously, you have Fly on a Boss running. You know, that's... Why don't we do that for promo?
Oh, yeah. Just run toward the camera.
Just run through the office.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We should do like, we're ever on TikTok, we'll be like the last people to do it.
But like, we're going to kill the fly out of boss.
Officially, we're going to 100% end it. But catchphrase up. And again, totally fine. I like the songs quite a lot. Mm-hmm. But on a basic level, they're catchphrase hits. Like you almost feel like you want a separate chart for kind of like the snippets and the catchphrases.
Yeah, and the, you know, Spotify has a viral 50 chart, but it doesn't quite capture this thing. But I do
think
it's
like a little too broad.
I do think in a different, slightly different micro era one of these things, whether it's Kali area codes or Fianna Boss, you wish.
Yeah.
Would have caught on and become a radio smash and would be fixed in the top 10.
Could happen. I think it still could happen.
But it didn't quite happen for either of these, at least at the moment when they were hottest.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing. I think the space between viral moment and actual hit song has weirdly never been further away because the other ecosystem can last long enough.
And can hold all the interest.
Right.
Which is, and again, I don't know if I totally agree with you, but I do think on the level that I think if there is unanimity to be found, it's here in the phone.
Right.
It's not on the radio. Like that, what you're saying makes sense with that. I do think that there's a lot more fluidity in the crossover between these spaces. I mean, we all know you listen to a Z100 or an equivalent station in another city. You're basically just hearing TikTok songs.
Top 40.
Yeah, top 40.
But you're hearing TikTok songs from like a year ago.
Right. Well, it's a little fast. I feel like it's a little fast. I'm always a little bit surprised.
Okay.
Sometimes when I put on Z100, I'm kind of like, that was only popping like 4 weeks ago.
But you're like still hearing Gale, A, B, C, D, F, U, whatever. No?
I'm shaking my head in disregard. I would like to be removed from this narrative from which I have been included since whatever.
The other sort of catchphrase whiff I wanted to mention is that, like, if you listen to Popcast Deluxe, you know about Pinky Doll and you know about Ice Cream So Good, and you know that we said in 2 weeks, Doll is going to have a single. And in fact,
she does.
They made Ice Cream So Good a song in collaboration with
Fashion Nova.
Fashion Nova, who have collaborated with Cardi B and others.
They didn't make song with Cardi B.
They basically did. She announced her partnership with a line about Fashion Nova in a song.
That's a little different. That's ungenerous to Cardi B.
I'm not thinking it's a slight for Cardi B or Pinky Doll to collaborate with Fashion Nova. I'm just saying, like, there's a universe in which
we don't support fast fashion on this podcast.
Okay. All right.
The fashion part of this podcast does not support fast fashion. Okay. Where'd you get your t-shirt?
This is Lady White. It's a nice.
Oh, that's nice.
Company.
Oh, so you don't support fast fashion either.
All right. Yeah.
Okay,
no,
great.
My t-shirts are usually of high quality.
You're doing great.
Yeah,
you're
thanks.
Doing great, babe.
Thanks. As long as it's plain, I'll wear it. No, I'm not. Okay. I'm not trying to not spend money.
I was like a little bit nervous. I was like, I hope you don't say Uniqlo. Uniqlo. No. I was really hoping you wouldn't say that.
No. I just think there's a universe in which a stronger machine could have gotten behind Pinky Doll and been like, we're going to make a song of the
that
summer.
That may yet happen is sort of what I like.
I just think,
you don't think?
It's not as easy as it used to be in some ways. Or
maybe she's just not a good rapper.
That's fine too. I mean, she's literally not a rapper. So it's like, there's no reason why she should be able to make a hit song. But this sort of
hasn't stopped any number.
Well, but this leads us to its own category, which is the sort of memes of the summer that might as well be songs of the summer.
Yeah, like to me, like if you were to say, you know, gun to the head, like what's the real going off at the party song of the summer? It's World Class Center.
It's World Class Center.
I'm a freak.
It's Jocelyn. Yeah. Which, you know, has become the theme song of this show, I might say.
Yeah.
like if we had the money, we'd license it for the top.
Absolutely.
And you'd hear it every week.
Totally agree. I was at a party not that long ago. The DJ played it three times.
Yeah.
Went off.
Every time.
Absolutely. And it was one of those things where maybe, let's say maybe one third of the room didn't know what it was.
But by the third time.
Yeah. But also the two thirds of the room that did know what it was really knew what it was and were really excited to hear it. So that to me, perfect example of a song traveling through an unconventional pathway. I don't think this song has made it to pop radio, which is a mistake. Shouldn't make it to pop radio. Like if I was programming a pop radio station, I absolutely would play this song.
Yeah.
Because whatever like ironic appreciation that there might be, doesn't matter.
Turns the so minute, quickly to genuine approval.
Yeah, the
approval.
Minute you put it in that context, it's just a good song.
Yeah. And there's a handful of these. I mean, yep. I think the one that's really popping at the moment, which I think is getting its official, quote unquote, official release this week, but has been teased a lot on TikTok and social media, is Planet of the Bass.
DJ Crazy Times,
which is like, you know, these are viral comedians. These are people shooting for, comedy success on TikTok and other short form platforms repeatedly.
I very much like all the music that this song is ripping off.
Right.
Should let's listen to the
yeah,
or watch the TikTok.
You want to watch the first one the that's original. Good or the subsequent one?
No, I think the original.
The original
one.
Planet of the Bass
original
teaser.
Recipe. Yeah. For a song to be the song of the summer or the song of a success, does the appreciation of that song have to be sincere? Can it be ironic or humorous? Like, I think there's this notion when we're talking about this collection of interest in a work of art that it's got to be uncomplicated. It's got to be positive. But what if the prevailing sentiment that aggregates a bunch of people's interest around a song or another piece of art or a television show or a comedy routine or whatever is ironic? What if it's we're all in on the joke?
Mm-hmm.
Is that not a valid way? You know, like I said earlier, it's like, what if it's trauma? Like, could be trauma.
Or it could be,
I'm just saying, like, you know,
broad
like,
humor.
Well, like, I mean, this is, again, this we're going in strange directions. But, like, if you think, like, the Alan Jackson song, like, in the wake of 9/11, like, that's collective trauma.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that could be a song of the summer or the fall or the winter or whatever. Why can't it be eyebrow arched wolves?
Yeah, I mean,
I just think like we have to like complicate the way that we talk about this stuff.
I just think Planet of the Bass doesn't work on both levels in the way that World Class Sinner works on both levels.
Oh, I totally agree. No, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying if we are going to take on its face that Planet of the Bass is like a valid contender for this conversation.
Yeah.
It's okay for us to expand the criteria by which these songs are judged.
So that brings us to Barbie, which has like a whole handful of contenders in this category
of
semi-ironic song of the summer.
I'm Just Ken.
I'm Just Ken.
A great Meatloaf song.
Which I imagine will be nominated for an Oscar at some point.
I cannot wait to see Ryan Gosling perform this.
Yeah, alongside James Corden or whatever. Like, actually, I
hope. Don't do that. James Corden.
Whenever the writer's strike ends, James, scratch that idea off your
list.
Here's
the thing, James Corden, if you're watching this, sit it out. Sit it out. Let it go. It's okay. Come back to it in 5 years.
Yeah.
We don't want it.
Yeah.
I'm Just Ken. A legitimately good song. A song I have caught myself.
Humming?
Yeah. Dark. You want to talk about dark energy. Imagine just sitting in your house alone and I'm Just Ken pops into your head. Like, that's not wavy.
Yeah, no.
That's not wavy. No. But a successful song.
Yeah.
Does the job.
Yeah.
And like you say, this movie full of songs like that, both original to the characters,
yep,
soundtrack songs,
yep,
about the characters,
yep,
and resuscitating old songs, you know, Indigo Girls, Closer to Fine, and crucially, Matchbox 20, Push.
Right. And we talked about both of these on the show and we talked about the Barbie soundtrack. But I think a couple weeks out now, we can say we sort of underestimated the legs that these songs would have. Especially.
We. We.
Here's one, the thing. I think
take
we
that
both,
again, but don't take it again. Own
I think
it.
We, I.
Thank,
but I think we both.
Thank you.
I'm getting to this. We both gave short shrift to the Nicki Minaj Ice Spice song Barbie World with Aqua. I think like we sort of breezed past this because it felt very paint by numbers for the Barbie soundtrack. Like, yes, of
the
course.
The most obvious
in like big dumb sample with the artist who calls her fans Barbs with the hottest
Female rapper of the moment.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Like it's so built in a lab, but like it's good.
Yep.
You know, and it just keeps growing. And I think it's gone from novelty hit, too big to fail, to actual giant smash song.
It actually, the ascent of it to me is not that different from the Padam Padam ascent, which kind of starts as another sort of like gay club anthem from Kylie Minogue.
Yeah.
And now is like basically inching towards genuine pop radio and like crossover success.
Yeah.
You know, Kylie is someone who has a hit in America. I mean, it has a lot of hits over in England and I assume in Australia. Doesn't have that
you
many.
You assume in Australia. Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry. I'm an expert in a lot of things, but the Australian,
the Australian charts.
The Australian charts elude me. But that song, not that it's a meme song, but it was.
It's a meme song, though.
I'm going to say it's not a meme song.
Treated as meme song, but not created as one.
Definitely not created as one. And I think was just an incredibly successful niche record that actually turns out to be a very, very effective pop record, especially in a moment that is starved of actual pop songs by pop stars.
Right. Like this song.
If there were five Lady Gaga songs currently popping, this song dies on the vine.
Right.
But because there's nothing, it can inch its way up.
And yeah, like you're saying, it has word of mouth, grassroots support, and not all of these songs do. So I think it's like as much of a contender in this conversation as anything we've mentioned prior. So we should just listen to a little bit of Kylie.
Definitely should. We'll talk about word of mouth.
Okay. So we have a late contender.
I'm not even sure. And I want to go on record as saying, I'm not even sure this should be in this conversation. I just want to say
timing
makes it so. And also the expanded notion of what are people expecting from songs that they can share with other people, share their enthusiasm for with other people. And there are new and evolving ways of expressing that enthusiasm.
So we're talking
what am I talking around right now?
We're talking about a little singer-songwriter by the name of Oliver Anthony.
Great beard.
Who we all learned about in the last
2 weeks. Yes.
I was going to say 3 days.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Went viral on conservative Twitter, I think is a fair way to put it.
Sure.
With a stripped down sort of performance video of a song called Rich Men North of Richmond.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Yes.
Let's just watch a little bit of the clip.
And yes.
You can immediately see what people are responding to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you listen a little closer and there's some dog whistles.
A lot of the subject matter, and this is also true of Try That in a Small Town. Like, if you just look on paper and you were compared to like any number of songs from a year, 3 years, 5 years ago, you'd say, you know, it's not radically different. Try That in a Small Town really escalates it because of how the video, what the video includes.
The Jason Aldean song.
Jason Aldean, sorry.
Which just hit number one and then plummeted because it was a...
Not a real
a cause,
hit.
Not
it
an
actual
hit.
Yes. This song, also very familiar themes, North versus South, people in power, holding down working people, all stuff, totally par for the course. But there are a couple of lyrics in here that let you know that there is a skepticism about systems of power.
And elites.
And elites that maybe goes one step beyond your average Nashville country song. This is also independent from what I can tell.
So this
is an outside the system.
Yeah, there's conversations about astroturfing. There's conversations about who's plugging this where and sort of how it's come up through the viral ecosystem. But it's very quickly been latched onto by conservative influencers, running the gamut. You know, Joe Rogan has gotten behind it also, who doesn't exactly fit in that world, but is influential.
It's a free thinker.
A free thinker. You know, and I do think there is a sort of fetishization of authenticity and like you're saying, independence or the presentation of independence. But then there's Jeffrey Epstein reference. You know, there's a pretty brutal and ugly line about welfare.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can just listen to it.
I wish politicians look out for miners and not just miners on an island somewhere. Lord, we got folks in the street, ain't got nothing to heat, and the whole beast milking welfare.
So there's that. But where I think this song differs from Try That in a Small Town is that it does...
Not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. Like, it, yeah. musically, yeah. It's catchy. Like, yeah. I do think this song can start as a conservative cause and become an audience favorite.
Yeah, and I'm sort of interested in how country radio is going to deal with stuff like this. Now, obviously, this is not produced in the way that, like, a lot of... I don't know, like Kit Moore records or whatever. I'm sorry. It's like a 3-year-old reference at this point. But like, you know, it's not produced in the way that a lot of like male country singers are produced. It's probably produced closer to like, frankly, like what is Zach Bryan's song?
Yes.
And Zach Bryan is not exactly a country radio favorite, but I do wonder if country radio will be forced to reckon with ideas like this. And for all the talk about inclusion and diversity and like, yes, we're going to try to play women and we're going to try to play non-white artists. And so are some stations going to lean in and say, actually, this is what we're playing. And then if they do, what comes on the heels of it?
And I think that this might be a more effective record with which to play those games than Try That in a Small Town, which like you can see in the numbers, people didn't actually want to hear. Like they wanted to buy it to prove a point about the backlash to the video,
right.
See it at number one on the charts, and then completely abandon it.
Except if you were making memes about the Montgomery brawl.
I do think Richmond, North of Richmond, is interesting sonically when compared to the other country smash of the summer, which is nearly as big as Last Night by Morgan Wallen, but has none of the sort of pop songwriting production. And that's Fast Car by Luke Combs,
which we've talked about before. You know, it's interesting. The politics of Fast Car by Luke Combs are fascinating, and yet it makes for a rather unfascinating song. And if there is interest aggregated by this Luke Combs song, I'm not sure really what interest. You know, the thing with the Richmond, North of Richmond, we're talking about how other songs exist to be the recipient of the enthusiasm of a particular microclimate. That's what the Richmond, North of Richmond has become.
But for political ideas, and economic anxiety, quote unquote.
Right. And a lot of it is attending to this song. I'm not sure what Fast Car is aggregating.
It might be the same thing because Fast Car is also a folk song about the working class. Like,
Do you think people think Luke Combs wrote that song?
I think a lot of people,
Luke Combs' writers wrote that song.
I mean, I don't think people think that deep, but like, I think a lot of people
only know it as a Luke Combs song, coming to it
as an original. And so they don't see the political nuance of the Tracy Chapman version, and they see it as country music.
Yeah.
You know, like straight ahead country music. And that's why I think like somebody could listen to both Fast Car and this Oliver Anthony song and not really feel the disconnect between the ideas. They might think they're of a piece if you're not listening that closely or if you're especially dogmatic in your beliefs.
I feel pretty similarly about the Jelly Roll record that's very popular right now, Need a Favor. Jelly Roll, what's fascinating to me is Jelly Roll is, that's a fascinating person, came out of like white boy rap in the South, like talks about his extensive drug use, you know, very much in like what we would think of as like an outlaw country tradition, but is making these like very down the center redemption songs and has been embraced by the country mainstream, which is, I mean, I've been around a long time covering especially the intersections between sort of like Southern rap, white country rap, and the country mainstream. There were people doing versions of this previously that the country radio absolutely ignored. And for some reason, they have glommed on to Jelly Roll. It's actually quite striking to see. But I do think that's like the success of Jelly Roll leaves a lot of that story or the backstory off to the side in the same way the success of Fast Car leaves a lot of that backstory off to the side. It's interesting to see how country and country radio is taking these fundamentally complicated figures and songs and just kind of like sandpapering them down to like a pure essence of, nope, this is just a hit.
So
Should we listen to this Jelly Roll song?
This is Need a Favor by Jelly Roll.
Listen to Jelly Roll.
Talk to God when I need a favor, and I only pray when I ain't got a prayer. So who the hell am I? Who the hell am I to expect a savior? Oh, if I only talk.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
On some level, I feel like us saying Fast Car, Need a Favor, being, or even last night being a song of the summer, it's like a white guy from the South.
Yeah, what about making, the rest of the universe?
Yeah, I mean, it's like those songs are popular. It reminds me a little bit of like that stretch on American Idol when like the only people who won American Idol were like white singers from the singer-songwriters from the South, because like that's who showed up to vote. But that is by no means reflective of what is actually happening in pop music. And you want to talk about microclimates, you're talking about K-pop, you're talking about Afrobeat, you're talking about reggae, you're talking about regional Mexican music.
Not that micro, it turns out.
Right, exactly. And so I think the last category of songs that we're going to talk about are the songs that, in the way that we were saying that there are people who don't know who Morgan Wallen is and feel like and are surprised, these, to my ear, these are the actual cross-demographic hits. But I wouldn't be surprised if people who are really into Morgan Wallen are not totally plugged in on what some of this is.
And vice versa.
Yeah. Peso Pluma, who we talked about before. There's Ella Baezola. This is with Esteban Armado. One of, 37 Peso Pluma songs that have become big in the last, 6 months.
Yeah.
That is, again, you're not going to hear it on Z100, but if you are on Spotify charts or viral charts, it is legitimately everywhere. He's selling out arenas across the country as we speak. So that's one part.
The interesting thing about Peso Pluma to me is that there's not the one record that's really all driving records. The success. It's just all of them. Yeah. You know, there's also La Bebe with Young Lucas. Mm-hmm. I got a text from the West Coast this weekend that was basically
we have news from the West Coast,
and it was like Peso Pluma everywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the way that like New York has its own songs of the summer. And I think Peso Pluma is that for a lot of the country, but especially the West and the Southwest.
Speaking of a New York specific or New York heavy record, I know we're
used to it. So Taliban's Byron Messiah, I believe he's from St. Kitts, is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
But of Jamaican heritage. And this is the dance hall sort of, you know, Caribbean smash that is playing across Brooklyn and the outer boroughs.
There's like a basically long-standing thing. If you have grown up in New York listening to Hot 97, you'll know that every summer there will be one dancehall song, maybe two, that becomes the sort of de facto crossover hit. Sometimes it's by a major star. Sometimes it's by someone who you don't know or a relatively minor figure.
Yep.
But there tends to be one, and there has been over the years.
Well, and then they add to the list and they get played every summer until the end of time.
Absolutely.
Like Egyptian Hold Ya, Omi Cheerleader, that was one. Oh, remember that song?
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, this year it's definitely Taliban's.
Was it Charlie Black, You a Party Animal?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great. I just heard that on the radio the other day.
Taliban's got a Burna Boy remix a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I think Burna Boy gearing up for an album puts in a good performance. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this has seemingly been a slow grower across the rest of the country, though it is definitely growing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think in New York, this song has a special chokehold. So let's just listen to a little bit of Taliban's.
So should I keep in your bed, cause the Taliban's them a make quack. We no laugh, we no take talk. Badness is how we end us. We no show people feeling up in a red grass. Yo, Taliban's like them, we are sure guns.
So that's Taliban's by Byron Messiah.
You mentioned Burna Boy. Burna Boy still, in a sense, just, you know, sold out City Field not that long ago. But Burna Boy does not have the big Afrobeat song of the year, at least not here. That's Rema. to me, the sleeper song of this, if there is like one that's a universal song of the summer, but like kind of almost so low key that you almost forget that
it came out last summer.
Right. And I feel like it's been out for like 7 years at this point. So that's Calm Down. There's a solo version. There's a version with Selena Gomez.
Which I heard in the bodega this weekend. I was vibing.
It was on
great,
point.
Great bodega music. Song. Yeah.
But also probably soon to be a great CBS song.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like both a compliment and a shot. But this song is the sort of ne plus ultra of Afrobeats pop crossover.
Yep.
It's so effective at it that you almost don't notice that that's what it's doing.
Which is why Selena is the perfect guest for it. Like Selena, low-key, the biggest pop star in the world.
Very low-key, though. Yeah. But actually low-key, though.
Like, almost the most followers across all of Instagram. You know, just like secretly the inspiration for Jocelyn. You know, just like nobody knows.
Oh, we're putting all the conspiracy theories out on this episode. Just like, okay.
But Selena Gomez, perfect guest for a song called Calm Down that's by an Afrobeat star who nobody really knows yet is humongous. You know?
Huge. The last thing we should talk about is K-pop.
Yeah.
We talked about New Jeans before.
Yeah. I mentioned Super Shy, you know, becoming, since it came out a few weeks ago, like my personal song of the summer, both in vibe and in sound and in sort of, you know, it's becoming inescapable, I think.
I think you also have Cupid by 50/50. We should listen to a little bit of Cupid. These songs to me, these kind of like new generation post-Blackpink female girl groups. These songs, post-Blackpink girl groups, a lot of musical creativity, a tremendous amount of like online attention and energy. And also just, I think the songs are being made with a little bit more of, how do you put this? There's a global ear that's already being baked into the production. It reminds me a little bit of kind of like the peak era of Big Bang, where I was like, okay, like the people who are making these songs clearly want to be in dialogue, but I don't know if the world was ready to receive those records, like in a just world, like a G-Dragon solo record, like could have gotten American pop play, but I don't think it did. Now I feel like all the sort of component parts are aligning.
I also think instead of trying to be every global sound at once, like tossed together, these new generation groups are feeling a little bit more comfortable because of this atomization of pop that we're talking about, picking one micro genre, you know,
and
leaning into that, but doing it with the bigness that K-pop does everything.
Should we just talk about songs, a song each of us that we like, that we would like to see?
Oh, you like music outside of the charts? I don't. I just like what's popular. I just like what the business is telling
you. You like what Drake likes.
I like what Drake likes.
Okay, I'm gonna say a record that I've been enjoying that has popped up on Instagram for me and on TikTok quite a bit. It's from Houston, longstanding fan and follower of Houston hip hop. This is Johnny Dang by That Mexican OT with Paul Wall. So let's listen to a little bit of Johnny Dang.
Louis Vuitton umbrella when I walk through the rain. In the kitchen whipping chicken, counting bread like kinds. Good dog got a Mexican liquor like Johnny Dine. Heat deep, muddy water stick, carry my cane. Right pocket got money, left pocket cocaine. Bulletproof white Cadillac riding in the tank. I'm a dirty bag, baby from Dirty Bay with a dirty case. Slide down your block, light it up with flames. Chopping on the block, wide lake, doing jumper jacks. Smoking on the wood, yellow timber like it's lumberjack. Suppress on the Mac 10, sounding like it's bubble. Running TV in the shower, I'ma give his ass a bubble bath.
Nice.
Thank you.
Can I talk about a song that almost no one has listened to? I think last time I watched this YouTube video, which I watch multiple times a week, it still had like under 1,000 views.
No.
Yes.
Wow. You really came to flex on me. You came to style on me.
This is like the song that I've played the most before Super Shy came out. Okay. And it's called Titi Got Mad. I believe Nobel's tweeted it or something.
Okay.
Put me on. Shout out to Manu and Milan.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know which of you was behind the keys on that one. But this is someone called P people.
Like P-E-O-P-L-E?
Yep.
Okay.
And A.O. Lee. And I think these guys are from Milwaukee.
Yeah, Milwaukee. Yeah.
But the beat is incredible. It's really tight. It's two verses. It's like a minute and change. And I just play it on repeat. And it's like, and it has what I'm looking for, which is I would like to sing and hear and move to this with a group of people who all love it at once. And to me, that's a
very retrograde idea of Song of the Summer. I know, as we and that's determined, the best, but that's okay.
That's the best version to me of what a Song of the Summer could represent. Right. And yet, like, again, nobody's listening to the song. So it's like
the song of your headphones.
It's impossible to pull
after
off.
This is your chance. Right, right. If anybody would like to dance to TT Got Mad with Joe, drop us an email, popcast.nylotimes.com. Like, we'll find a way to make that happen.
Yeah, if everyone learns.
I'm going to make one of those like TikTok memes of you where you're like, your photo is superimposed on like the dancing. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm going to do that. And then, yeah, we'll make that happen.
All right. Thank you.
No problem.
Five pops coming down on hotel. Big Glock on me, hell no, you can't hold it. No crib, but these wheels steady rolling. Ayo, Lee, hit that cut and leave it smoking. I just want to get high today. Plane, I'm going to put them in a sky. Put it up like, bitch shaking eyes in the backseat.
Should we go out with snack?
Honestly, man, I am starving.
I brought you a Song of the Summer in chip form.
I am on God, I am starving.
We're going to A-B test. This is for the barbecue. Okay. This is
right.
New Doritos. This is ketchup
new
and
Dorito.
Hot mustard okay. flavored
New
Doritos.
Doritos just dropped. Okay. And as you have sort of pointed out privately, and I wonder if on the podcast, like I struggle with spice.
You struggle with spice.
You have said in public about me, John finds cool ranch Doritos spicy.
Which is both a shot and a fact.
A tender stomach.
So we're going to start. You want to start with spicy?
Let's get through it.
Hot mustard?
Let's get through it.
All right.
Let's get through it.
This is a hot mustard Dorito. Okay. I got to say, I've been eating these all summer. I killed like a full size bag that was sent to me as a birthday gift by my friend Chris Chang. So
shout out Neg Nance
for the hot mustard Doritos.
Are these region?
They are easier to find in LA, but they're out here on the East Coast too.
Oh, these kind of smell like the mustard Zaps pretzel sticks.
Yes. It's not that spicy.
It's giving Zaps.
Yeah.
Oh, what's that? Oh man, what's that kick?
It's hot mustard. It's like, it's based on the mustard that comes with, this is the least loved Chinese food condiment. You know, you get the duck sauce, you get the soy sauce, and then you get the hot mustard in the yellow translucent packet. That's what I think this flavor is based on.
Is that vinegar?
It's a little vinegary, but not that spicy, right?
Once you get over the initial punch, yeah. Not that bad.
I gotta say, I've gone on a roller coaster with these. I didn't really like them when I first tried them. I came to love them, and now I'm basically over them. So I think they're like a flat 6 out of 10.
It's growing on me.
Okay.
I'm going to reserve judgment until we do both.
So you try that. So this is the tangy ketchup to complete the barbecue.
Got to keep the spice off the Cortez, though. We got to be careful.
Careful with the shirt.
Yeah. Is tangy a euphemism for spicy?
I think tangy is just because they need an adjective hot mustard.
Someone in the branding department.
Yeah.
Shout out the branding department.
Yeah. There's a little aftertaste of spice.
Oh, this is extremely ketchupy.
Yeah. So I love a ketchup chip.
I know.
A Hers ketchup chip, one of my favorites of all time. But these to me, it doesn't go with a tortilla chip. Ketchup and tortilla, like I want it on a normal potato chip. So to me, these are like a little better than the mustard, maybe like a 7 out of 10, but not the ideal vehicle for ketchup flavor for me.
These are very eatable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I like them.
Mm-hmm.
I might surprise you here.
Okay.
I'm going to go 7.5 on hot mustard.
Wow.
I'm gonna go 5.5 on ketchup.
Wow. So you turned out to be a mustard guy over a ketchup guy.
To be honest, I don't even have mustard on hot dogs.
I was gonna say, you like plain hot dog, don't you?
Yeah. I came to mustard, generally speaking, late in life. Only recently started applying mustard to anything.
Yeah.
That flavor feels more complex. There's a flatness to the ketchup flavor here where I just feel like it's like all of a sudden it's all over my tongue.
Yeah.
And like it doesn't really. There's no narrative. There's no narrative. This is a narrative chip. This is not a narrative chip.
I'm disappointed by both, I will say. As a big Doritos fan and a big ketchup chip lover, I support it, but I don't want it.
I'm actually knocking it down to 5. The more I'm eating.
You don't like the ketchup.
I just feel like it's just so flat. It's like evenly oozing throughout. Whereas like I said, the mustard one, it's kind of like, oh, and then it's like, and then it's like that. Mm-mm.
You like them as a pair, ketchup and mustard?
No,
would you want like a bowl mixed together? We should try that after the show.
All right, we'll try it later. We'll get back to you. That's our show. Every podcast ever. It's at nytimes.com/podcast. Every podcast deluxe. I made a tiny URL because this is like the extent of my technological literacy. Wow. tinyurl.com/podcast deluxe. tinyurl.com/podcast Facebook or podcast Discord to get involved, ask questions, talk to other people who are watching and listening. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com with your questions. We're taking questions of the week. We didn't take one this week because we're on topic, but.
And we're running low on questions. We need a fresh batch.
I would love some more questions.
Re-up
I would
on
love
the questions.
To know. Don't forget about the merch. It's the podcast.myshopify.com. T-shirts, a few left. Smalls, XL. A few people are picking up the last ones. We'd love to have you. Stickers as well. And our show. It's executive produced by Leslie Davis. It's produced by Sawyer Roque. We're edited by Jamie Heffetz. Thank you, of course, to Karen Gans. Thank you to Pedro Rosado. And we'll be back next week.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.